following is a sermon preached at St. Mark's Episcopal Church in Basking Ridge, New Jersey, a church where people connect to God, to each other, and to the needs of the world.
Long before the biblical stories were bound together in one book and encased in leather and gold gilt-edged paper and divided up into chapters and verses, the stories of the Bible, particularly the ones early on in the Old Testament, were stories that were told. They were told from one generation to another, oftentimes around a campfire. Kids would love listening to these stories, and I would imagine tug on their dad or mom's or grandma or granddad's robe. They tell the story again. You know, part of encasing it in leather and gold gilt edging paper and all of that kind of ups the churchiness of it all, and we can miss some of, some of the raw humor and drama of it. Sometimes we can end up taking it as something that it really isn't. In my professional and learned opinion, I think the stories of Isaac were the ones that the children of 3,000 years ago begged their parents to tell them. The story of Abraham is a story of drama. The story of Isaac's son, Jacob, is a story of drama. The story of their sons is mostly drama. They're thick, they're heavy, there's big themes that are going on. The story of Isaac isn't a drama. The story of Isaac is a comedy. His name is Isaac, which means laughter, and there's a reason for that. And I would bet that of all the stories of Isaac that the little children of 3,000 years ago wanted to hear, it was the story that Roger read a few moments ago, the story of the coming together of Isaac and Rebekah. Because if we can kind of peel away the seriousness that we have laid upon it and the gold gilt edging and the leather casing and all of that, and look at the text for what it is, it's an incredibly entertaining story that also has an incredibly important meaning at the center of it. So Isaac's dad, Abraham, was a wanderer. He went everywhere. And Isaac's youngest son, Jacob, was also a wanderer. Traveled from Canaan to Mesopotamia to Egypt, all over the place. Isaac wasn't allowed to go anywhere. In fact, in the beginning of this chapter, which we didn't get in this morning's lesson, Abraham says several times, "My son is not to leave home." And a lot of scholars think that that's because Isaac was seen as being a little thick, and that if he had been left to go away, that he might never have found his way home again. So, and Isaac is of the age where he is ready to be married. Remember, he is the one who bears the promise of blessing to Abraham and to the world. Abraham was promised he would have a great family. And in order to have a great family, he needed to have some children. He had Isaac. And in order for that family to become great and grow, Isaac needed to get busy as well. But Abraham, his dad, two things. He didn't want him to go anywhere, and he didn't want him to marry any of the local girls. He wanted him from Canaan. He wanted him to marry a Mesopotamian girl from where he was from, where he believed God's people were from. So Abraham sent one of his servants, a trusted servant, to make the 500-mile journey from modern-day Israel to modern-day Iraq to go back to the family homestead and come back with a nice girl. So the servant makes the 500-mile journey. He gets there. He finds Rebecca, and that's a funny story in and of itself, but I can't go into all the details or we'll be here forever. So go back and read it tonight. It's a funny little section. The servant has very high standards for the woman that he's going to pick for his master, sort of. So he finds Rebecca. He says, "Rebecca, will you come back with me and marry my servant's son?" She says, "Yes." She goes and asks her father's permission. Father's permission is granted. "Yes, you may go." Now, this is a very exciting thing for a child 3,000 years ago, because people back then didn't travel. They didn't go on vacation to the shore or to the mountains. They stayed put. Rebecca would have lived every day of her entire life seeing the same sights, smelling the same smells, hearing the same sounds, and doing the exact same chores she did every day would have been exactly the same as the day before it. She was the lucky one in her family that got to hop and drive and go 500 miles to a new place. This was very exciting. All of her siblings and cousins would have been green with jealousy. So she hops on the back of this camel, and she begins this journey of promise. And she travels 500 miles across Iraq, through Syria, and makes it into the land of Canaan, modern-day Israel. And as she is coming into her her new home, and we all know what this is like. You know, even if you're just journeying for a vacation, you do the long journey, and then you're just about there, and you kind of perk up a little bit, and you're taking in all the sights and the sounds and the smells and what's going on. She is going into this new home that she is going to live for the rest of her life, and you better believe she is excited. And she's looking around, and she looks off, and she sees in a hill a man who is in the field. Now, in our translation this morning from the New Revised Standard Version, it says he is walking in the field. I assure you, he is not walking in the field. The Hebrew there is the Hebrew word leshish. There's actually, believe it or not, a lot of scholarly discussion over what this word means. I read two scholarly articles the past couple weeks that gave no fewer than 14 possible possibilities to translate this Hebrew word leshish. The best that scholars can do is they have found other words in other ancient languages which resemble leshish very closely, which don't mean to walk. If you read the King James Bible or another Old English translation, it'll say that he was out there praying or meditating. Okay, that wasn't what the little kids gathering around the fire wanted to hear. It's not actually what the word means. To put it delicately, Isaac was in the field because nature called. And I'm really not making it up. That's what the word means. So Rebecca is coming in town. The first thing she sees is a man standing in a field because nature has called. Okay? And so the next thing that happens is, in our English translation, stilts it again. It says, she slipped quickly from her camel. No. What did she do? She fell from her camel. The Hebrew phrase there literally means she fell off the camel. Now, you don't fall off the camel unless there's something, really, shocking in the field. She says she has this shocking thing in this field, and she falls off the camel. She then asks the servant, who she has made this 500-mile journey with, a question. And you know that as the words and the question came out of her mouth, that she already knew the answer to the question. She said, "Good sir, who is the man in the field?" Now, at this point in the story, the servant could have been a good friend to Isaac and have, created a distraction. Oh, him? I don't know. Look over here. We have a fountain. We have a waterfall. Episcopal Church from Canaan is over here. Look at this. It's very beautiful. Or he could throw Isaac under the bus, which is exactly what he does. Oh, the man in the field? That's Isaac, the one you're going to marry. And what's the next thing that Rebecca does? But she covers her face. Of course she does. She's just made this 500-mile journey to this new land, and she's seen her husband, and she's thinking, oh my goodness, what have I done? Now, if you are a 9-year-old little boy from 3,000 years ago, don't you want to hear the story over and over again? Isn't this a compelling story? Isn't this a lot better than she just slipped quickly from her camel? No, this is an exciting story that was told over and over and over again because it's funny, because it's a good story, because it tells well, and kids would have wanted to hear it over and over and over again. And the parents and the grandparents who got to tell the story over and over again not only got to tell a great story, but they also got to tell a great story that has a very important meaning to it. It's a funny story, but there's substance here as well. Because what they are also telling their children and their grandchildren is, you do not need to be suave and sophisticated. You do not need to have your act together. You do not need to have your life buttoned up perfectly. You do not need to be a paragon of social acceptance. Even if you are a fool like Isaac who gets caught in the field, God can still use you. Isaac is not an inconsequential figure in the Bible. He is the middle patriarch. He is the bearer of the blessing of God. It is from him that Jacob and Esau would spring, and out of Jacob would come the 12 sons who become the fathers of the 12 tribes of Israel. He's an incredibly important person, and he was a bit of a fool. He was laughter. His life was a life of laughter, and he was an example to all of the little children of Canaan and Israel. That God can use a person even like Isaac. It's actually a standard theme that goes throughout the Bible, that God can use fools like Isaac, like the prophet Jonah, which is also a comedy. God can use people who are moral failures, like David, like Moses, who kills a guy. God can use someone who is the exact opposite of an example of faithfulness, like Peter, who denies Jesus 3 times on the night when he needed him the most. God works through the strangest of people like us. I mean, I don't know about you, great connection to this story because, in my life, I am far less Cary Grant and Brad Pitt and far more like Isaac. After the 8 o'clock service, a bunch of us stood in the back and recounted our Isaac moments where we are laughable. I had an Isaac moment yesterday. I traveled to St. Martin's in Bridgewater to send off our kids on their ASP journey. I got there. I was given a foolproof sheet of a little liturgy to send our kids off. Every word of the prayer was right there. All I had to do was read the words. It would have been fine. I read most of them, and towards the end I said, I'm going to pray my own prayer. And I put the thing away, and I prayed this prayer, blessing our kids and their journey, and that they would make it to Tennessee, and that all would be fine, and that they would do great things. And I said amen, and then Boyd McCone, about 3 feet away, said, we're going to Kentucky. I just agonized over that the entire drive home from St. Martin's Bridgewater. And we all have... those moments. And the story of Isaac is one of these stories that reminds us that it's okay. That God not only can use us, but we are the most likely people that God will use. And when we peel the leather binding and the gold gilt edging and the these and the thous and the chapters and verses off of this holy book, these are the truths that we get. They're the truths that the little children 3,000 years ago got. They're the truths that we hear, and hopefully they will be the stories that our young ones will beg, please tell me the story of Isaac one more time.